Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Welcome to Monday night's program. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for joining us a bit tonight. Stick around as long as you can stand it. All right? Huh? Did you have a good weekend? Did you have floods? Or did you have tornadoes? Or did you have stifling heat? Airport delays? What else? Rescue attempts? We must be in the end times. Burning buildings that don't seem to collapse right at ground zero. Amazing, isn't it? Hey, I guess you saw what Kathy posted at our website today, and it's at the NovaMRadio.com website now, about Tony Snow, the latest rat to leave the sinking good ship Chucklenuts, right in the slimy slither marks of Karl Rove. We know why Karl Rove is gone. He's gone to launch a World War III against Hillary Clinton, and he started on Sunday. Jesus, I'm going to have to wind up supporting her. But poor sick Tony. I really, there's a part of me really feels sorry for this guy. You know, he's got this hideous metastasizing cancer that is so obvious every time you see him on television. He's had so many legitimate reasons to quit his post, the very obvious cancer recurrence and chemotherapy being the most important. But instead, he says he left to spend more quality time with his ATM card. Tony's not making enough money as a federal employee, and that's why he says he's leaving. Now, that could be the most disingenuous comment ever made by someone who is suffering from metastasized colon cancer. It might be a reflection on how badly they treat him at the White House, or it could be just, you know, some sort of Stockholm syndrome as a result of all those years at Fox News. But it might be the only honest thing, also, he said in his miserable career as a Bush crime family minion and a distorter and a violator of the truth, obliterator of the truth over at Fox News and Fox Radio. So you go, Tony. I mean, sure, what the hell? Go ahead. Get that, you know, book deal or a list of speaking engagements. Or, you know, back to Fox News and make millions. Why not? The rest of us can get by somehow on less than the $168K a year that says you were making. I guess he got spoiled by Murdoch, but you know, I don't wish Tony Snow any grief. Although he has provided the American public with lies, deceptions, doublespeak, nonsense, just horrible stuff his entire political career, whether it's been as a commentator, a newscaster, or a spokesman for this vicious crime family. By the same token, once somebody you know, takes a bite out of the big C, or the big C starts to eat them alive, It's kind of hard, isn't it? I mean, it is to. Okay, it's not hard at all. I got a series of emails, a couple last week, from one of our regular correspondents, Prairie Two. And he was warning me that the new passports contain microchips. And I wrote back to him, and I said, no, I looked it up on the State Department website. There are certain passports that will contain them, but, you know, not just for us common folk. And then it occurred to me, even as I wrote that, I mean, what do you mean certain passports? A passport's a passport's a passport. So, but anyway, I went ahead to Prairie 2 and said, nah, that's, you know, it's one of those tinfoil hat things. Maybe at some point down the road it'll happen, but not now. So a couple days went by, and, you know, I was doing my cough medicine and choking to death, and I got out of bed and got my passport out, my brand-new passport, and I started thumbing through it, feeling the pages. No, nothing there. But then I get to the last page, page 28 of my passport, and it says, "This document contains sensitive electronics. For best performance, do not bend, perforate, or expose to extreme temperatures." What the hell? So I look at Molly's, yep, who's three. I look at Kathy's, yep. So my apologies to Prairie too. When you get your new passport, Truth Seeker, there it is. Now, you know, my old passport, I never saw that. Of course, my old passport is about 25 years old, so it had expired. "This document contains sensitive electronics." Son of a bitch. Okay, well, maybe it's for our own good. Huh? Maybe it's for our own good. Maybe we're at that point now with the crazy people on this planet. I was watching some news report today about Virginia Tech. School year has started where the slaughter occurred last school year. And the story was about how the proliferation of security cameras on so many university campuses. And you all know that the most surveilled people on the planet now are the English. People live in the UK, especially if you live in England. I think there's one surveillance camera for every 200 people in that nation. It's probably, that ratio is probably wrong, but it's not far wrong. And I've read that the average Briton can expect to be photographed something, you know, who's out and about, can expect to be photographed over 100 times a day or videotaped. And so I'm you know, we were thinking, we were talking about this today, Kathy and I, and, you know, it's almost like you can't put this genie back in the bottle. This is it. This is the new world order. This is the new way of keeping track of populations, especially Western populations. Can you imagine that if the Soviets would have had this? Oh, my God, they would have just, it would have been orgasmic to have surveillance cameras all over the place. But here it is. Here is Orwell's telescreen thing, the two-way telescreen. Much more sophisticated, obviously, since Orwell wrote his book, 60 years ago, but much more sophisticated. And it's something that you and I, and more importantly, your children and my children and grandchildren, are going to accept as just a fact of life. The way you and I, if you're over a certain age, the way you and I accepted the idea that some people did not have to have a party line on their telephone. People under 40 right now going, what party line? What the hell is he talking about? Yeah, never mind. But it used to be when you had a phone in your house, it was great fun. You could pick it up, and if you didn't have a private line, you could pick it up. And if somebody was on it down the street or 4 or 5 blocks away, you could listen in on their conversation. George W. Bush knows about that. So, anyway, we're kind of stuck with it. And I think it's less about foreign terrorists or bomb throwers and more about domestic. I mean, let's face it, surveillance cameras we've had in this society now for what? A proliferation of them. For how long? 30 years? In banks and places like that. There's always been security cameras. The entrance to, well, not always, but the entrance to office buildings. Every time I go up to an ATM right now, to get $20 out, I know I'm on camera, and I think, okay, well, maybe that's a good thing, but you know, the price of security is always your freedom. So it's just, I don't know. Weird. So anyway, to Prairie Two, thanks for the real paranoid weekend, pal. This document contains sensitive electronics. See, not just electronics, but sensitive electronics. For best performance, do not bend, perforate, or expose to extreme temperatures. Oh my God! All right, we have a quote from a Reagan, one of Reagan's diaries, from May 17th, 1986. Also, Mike G in Illinois sent me a quote from Stargate SG-1. Which you're going to like. What else do we have here? A Reagan appointee who has been retired from the State Department and has a lawsuit against him because of statements he made about Arab speakers. And what the Department of Defense, how they stopped a plan to send Christian video games to our troops in Iraq. Wait to hear what the games were about. And more poison from China, this time in children's clothing. Oh, God. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Oh, we have Uncle Mike's story corner tonight, too. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Standing up to the flying monkey right, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. So what's going on up in, where are they meeting? In Quebec, someplace in the province of Quebec, Bush and Harper and, is it Calderon? What's the Mexican president's name? Is it Calderon? I don't even know. Jesus, I should know. I guess it is Calderon. And I haven't heard anything about it today. See a little bit of video on Nightly News tonight, one of the networks, of Canadians saying, no, hell no, get out of here, protesting Bush. You know, the usual, here come the police, there's the tear gas. You go, boys. Here's this, Mike in Illinois sent this to me. This is from Stargate, SG-1. Here's the quote, protecting and defending secrecy? That's the world of Mao, the world of Stalin, the world of secret police, secret trials, secret deaths. You force the press into the cold and all you will get is lies and innuendo. And nothing is worse for a free society than a press that is in the service of the, in the service to the military and the politicians. Nothing. Yeah. And then we find out about CNN. What's his name? What's his name? You know, the CNN guy. Used to be the head of CNN. I'll find it here in a second. But it turns out that Easton Jordan. Oh, screw it. I never worked for him. I worked for the other freaks. But before CNN hired their military, you know, retired generals, they went to the Defense Department to vet these guys. And once you do that, you know, once you you cross that line, you want to hire a general. But my God, so Easton Jordan, oh, here it is, yeah. Former CNN news chief Easton Jordan said that he was merely checking on expertise with the Pentagon. This was back on the eve of the invasion of Iraq. Easton Jordan went to the Defense Department, to the Pentagon, to get a thumbs up on certain retired generals who CNN wanted to hire as news analysts before the cable network hired them to provide on-air assessment of the Iraq War. Now, what do you suppose those assessments, what point of view do you suppose those assessments took? Well, you don't have to guess. You were there. So was I. Initially, during an appearance on CNN, Jordan stated, quote, I think it's important to have experts explain the war and to describe the military hardware, describe the tactics, talk about the strategy behind the conflict. I went to the Pentagon myself several times before the war started and met with important people there and said, for instance, at CNN, here are the generals we're thinking of retaining to advise us on the air and off the air about the war. And we got a big thumbs up on all of them. This explanation from Easton Jordan last week came in response to a new documentary film called War Made Easy, which includes a critique of his seeking his so-called thumbs up from the Pentagon on who CNN was going to hire. And the documentary is based on a book of the same title by Norman Solomon, who's the executive director of the Institute for Public Accuracy. Jeff Cohen, who heads Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, or he used to, I don't know what Jeff does now, said today, I've questioned media managers about their over-reliance on military brass for years and debated the topic on CNN for 13 years. The public has often been misled, as in the run-up to the Iraq invasion. If TV networks covered labor issues by such heavy reliance on lifelong union officials who had retired from the labor movement in good standing, it would be seen as biased and incomplete, but it's considered A-OK if it's a high-ranked Pentagon alumni. Yeah. Yeah. So what are you going to do, huh? When you have news media working at cross-purposes with the idea of an informed citizenry, which is necessary to the continuation of a free state. When you have media, when you have the press working against you, what chance do you have? Especially the electronic press now. And I think this is one of the reasons that the internet is so critically important. When you separate all the chaff that flies around the internet, and God knows that there's an inordinate amount of it, but when you separate that stuff, what is left is truth that is not available, for obvious reasons, via mainstream media. It's not a cliche. It's not a tinfoil hat thing. It's not just, oh, well, let's attack mainstream media. It's true. It's absolutely true. And the proof is there. Like what's-his-name used to say, the truth is out there. But it's too scary. Reagan Diaries, a quick quote, and the full quote from Thomas Jefferson about the Tree of Liberty. And then we're going to get to the hardcore grunt part of the program. All right? Stay with us. This is Novam Radio. I'm Mike Malloy.
Oh, everybody be careful. Oh, everybody be careful.
This document contains sensitive electronics.
I learned on TV. The man on the screen tells me who is our enemy. They say that we are free and we must fight to be number one. So when the army calls, I'll grab my TV, my car and my gun. And the TV God watches over me, opens up my eyes, shows me how to see all around the world.
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
26 before the hour. If you want some pictures of the Canadian police, I don't know if that's the proper way to say it, or if I should say the police, if they're military police or the Quebec police, provincial police, I don't know. Go to ottawa.indymedia.org. And click on the latest images. Some of these are very, very, well, I don't know. Fill it in. Ottawa.indymedia.org. And when the page comes up, it says, here are some of the latest images. There's a guy there with, it looks like George Bush giving the world a finger. But OttawaIndieMedia.org, Ottawa.IndieMedia.org, and it's kind of scary. This is that. What the hell is it? What is this meeting about? Don't we already have NAFTA? Oh well, we'll talk about it later. Here's a direct quote, and I checked with the New Republic, Michael Kinsley's. This came up when Kinsley was the editor at the New Republic way back in the 80s. And Kinsley, at Kinsley's blog today, he kind of confirmed this being true. He looked at the Reagan Diaries, and it's actually there. It's in the Reagan Diaries in Reagan's handwriting. But Kinsley says he doesn't remember the meeting. Now, what it was, there was a luncheon meeting, Michael Kinsley, Ronald Reagan, and a couple of other journalists. And they all met for lunch in the Oval Office. And then the meeting broke up. And Reagan wrote about it in his diaries later. And here's a direct quote from the just-published Reagan Diaries. And thanks to Global Research in Canada for this. And then we went to the New Republic website to get a confirmation. Here's the quote, dated May 17th, 1986. This is Reagan writing, quote, "A moment I've been dreading. George," referring to his vice president, "George brought his ne'er-do-well son around this morning and asked me to find the kid a job, not the political one who lives in Florida, the one who hangs around here all the time looking shiftless. This so-called kid is already almost 40 and has never had a real job. Maybe I'll call Kinsley over at the New Republic and see if they'll hire him as a contributing editor or something. That looks like easy work. That was Reagan. So Kinsley says, yep, it's there. It's in the Reagan diaries. Damn. But he says he doesn't remember a lunch meeting with Reagan. Not that this was discussed at the lunch meeting, but Reagan, either as a preface or a suffix to that quote, I think it's a prefacing that quote, Reagan talks about having lunch with these three writer/reporters. Among them was Michael Kinsley. Jesus, God. Yeah. All right. Last quote. This is Jeffrey. And I apologize for the weird-sounding voice tonight. It's still... I talked to my doctor today, and she said, look, the hoarseness and the coughing of this particular viral attack with her other patients is lasting anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks. I said, well, today is exactly a month since I got infected. She said, figure out another couple, 3 weeks. So I apologize for the ugly sound of my voice, but... I just hope you don't get this damn thing. It's probably from China. Here's the full Thomas Jefferson quote, thanks to Don, outside the gates in Montreal. This is the quote. What country before ever existed a century and a half without a rebellion? And what country can preserve its liberties if their rulers are not warned from time to time that their people preserve the spirit of resistance? Let them take arms. The remedy is to set them right as to the facts, pardon and pacify them. What signify a few lives lost in a century or two? The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. It is its natural manure. Yeah. Speaking of Reagan... There was a Reagan appointee. This guy's a real freak. I did a Wikipedia on him and a Google. Patrick Syring. Turns out he's from my hometown, Toledo, Ohio. I couldn't believe that. But the story is this guy who's been a diplomat. He's been in the State Department for about 20 years. He went off his nut. He's either a Jewish fundamentalist or a Christian fundamentalist. I would imagine he's probably Christian. Because so-called, I don't be offended if you're a Christian, you're a Jew, a real Christian, a real Jew who believe whatever. But this guy, I think he's probably one of these right-wing, bloodlusting Christian fundamentalists. He said the only Arab is only good Arab is a dead Arab in a voicemail that he left with an Arab American group. And this, according to the State Department last Thursday, the diplomat, Patrick Syring, was accused of having made abusive, intimidating, and racist comments in emails and voicemails to employees of the Arab American Institute, a Washington group that promotes Arab American interests. The State Department declined comment on this case, which was outlined in an indictment filed at a U.S. federal court last Wednesday. But the State Department said this guy has decided to, cough, cough, wink, wink, retire. Syring is alleged to have made the comments in a series of emails and voicemails to officials at the Arab American Institute, including its president, James Zogby. Yeah, that's James Zogby. When Israel was at war with Lebanon and the Hezbollah guerrillas last summer, in a voicemail recorded at the Institute July 17th, 2006, he says, the only good Lebanese is a dead Lebanese, the only good Arab is a dead Arab, long live the IDF, death to Lebanon, and death to the Arabs. And then he says, F the Arabs and F James Zogby and his wicked Hezbollah brothers. They will burn in hellfire on this earth and in the hereafter. That was in an email to Zogby. And he wrote to a couple of women there. It was just unbelievable. The voicemails and emails were sent from a personal email address. They were quoted in the indictment. And this guy served as a U.S. diplomat in the Middle East and most recently worked in the human resources of the State Department. Yeah, okay. God! He stands accused of violating U.S. law and federally protected rights and of making threatening communications. State Department spokesman Sean McCormick said such comments are unacceptable to the U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. Oh, we don't allow that. So when he gets convicted, he'll probably be pardoned. Things are really breaking down. This Christian Muslim thing is really, really, really getting out of hand. The latest plans by a Christian group in the U.S. to send an evangelical video game to U.S. troops in Iraq were halted last week by the Department of Defense after ABC News inquired about this video game. The group that's putting it out is called the Operation Startup Tour, OSU Tour. It's an evangelical entertainment troupe that actively proselytizes among soldiers. And they had this thing, it's an apocryphal video game that was going to be sent in care packages. Apparently, the video called Left Behind, Eternal Forces, was inspired by these two psychos, Tim LaHaye and Jerry Jenkins, the ones who wrote the Left Behind series. I think they've sold probably more copies than Harry Potter, about the Battle of Armageddon, in which believers of Jesus Christ fight the Antichrist, right? So this thing was put together, Left Behind, Eternal Forces. The game, Reverend Timothy Simpson of the Christians Alliance for Progress said, quote, it's a horrible game. You either kill or convert the other side. This is exactly what the Osama bin Ladens of the world have, how they've portrayed us, end quote. Well, with all due respect, Reverend Simpson, yeah. But, see, it's not up to atheists like me to try to do something about it. It's up to Christians like you to get rid of this poison out of your really, basically, psychotic religion. You really should. You know, you don't have to say it's a horrible game. No kidding. Now, the producer of the game, some freak named Troy Linden, said the game's, quote, warfare, end quote, is not violent, but that it emphasizes spiritual battles. The game gives incentives to recruit believers instead of killing the forces of the Antichrist. But if they won't convert, you cut their throats. You just murdered, blown them into red mist. See, how many times have I brought this up? This is what the Israeli Jews are facing with this deadly alliance that they have with these fundamental Christians in the United States. Jews, listen to me. The Christians will cut your throats. Don't you understand that? Oh, well, what the hell. A team of researchers at the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, which is obviously an atheist organization, discovered the plans to send this game in care packages to Iraq. And Max Blumenthal in The Nation first reported this a couple of issues ago. This group, OSU Tour, is one of the newest members of the Defense Department's America Supports You program, which connects citizens and corporations with members of the military. Citizens and corporations with members of the military. Uh-huh.
We don't fight a religion. No, we fight evil. No, our struggle is against evil people. Evil people that claim they're religious but are not.
Well, we're surrounded with those folks. Right here. A lot of them are in your cabinet, but hell, here in Atlanta. Oh, my God. So anyway, this OSU tour. OSU, Operation Startup. What the hell are they trying to start up? The president of that organization, Jonathan Sprinks, says his the aim of his group is to help military children and families become stronger through faith-based entertainment. Sports personalities, comedians, and actors, including Stephen Baldwin, make up the show. The president of the group, Jonathan Sprinks, in a recent press release said of Stephen Baldwin, quote, since God made a difference in his life, He's been very outspoken, end quote. Did you know that about Stephen Baldwin, one of the Baldwin brothers? I had no idea. Well, whatever. Now, Mr. Sprinks, who runs this religious Christian fanatical, let's go kill all the Muslims organization, I wonder if the skinny blonde is on their board of directors. I wouldn't be surprised. Sprinks came under fire from bloggers for writing this on his website. Quote, "We feel the forces of heaven have encouraged us to perform multiple crusades that will sweep through this region." He's talking about the tourist planned trip to Iraq. Quote, "We'll hold the only religious crusade of its size in the dangerous land of Iraq," end quote. Now, that text has been removed from their website, but you can still view it on the cached page. Is that how you say that? Cached? In addition to the game, this kill all the non-believers, left behind eternal forces here, murder them, kill all the Muslims and then get a few Jews in your crosshairs, get them too, you know, they're the ones that butchered Jesus. No, it wasn't the Romans, it was those Jews. You know that's what they believe. In addition to the game, OSU Tours Freedom Packets, must have a picture of Sean Hannity in there, huh? Freedom Packets were to include pocket-sized editions of the New Testament. Not the Bible. Not that part about the Jews. The New Testament. Well, yeah, I know Jesus was a Jew, but not really. That's all made up. It also will contain evangelical DVDs and books, baby wipes, and phone cards. Left Behind, : Eternal Forces. You couldn't make this stuff up. This reminds me of some of those weird movies from the, I don't know, 50s, 60s, 70s, about strange cult-like forces that were seizing and assuming power. They were the sorts of movies, back in the 50s anyway, that were supposed to warn us against the coming Soviet takeover of everything. That's what all the space monster movies were about back in the 50s. The subtext, the real message of those was the communist threat. It wasn't the Martian threat or the threat from outer space. It was a communist threat. But they didn't do it directly because otherwise people wouldn't come to the theaters to see the movies. So it was outer space threats equals communist threats. And you know, how to defend or protect yourself or defeat them. And then it switched to all these internal U.S. plots. And now this religious insanity, this is not stopping. It doesn't make any difference how many books are written by well-known atheists like Christopher Hitchens. This stuff is not stopping. It's intensifying. Teresa in Ontario, Canada, writes, "Mike, the Globe and Mail in Toronto just reported that the Three Amigos summit was concluding early due to, quote, hurricane concerns, end quote, cited by Mexican President Calderon. That's understandable because Hurricane Dean is now up to Category 5. But what in the hell is Bush's excuse? He wouldn't leave the damn ranch, even as Katrina was killing thousands of Americans, unless, oh, I get it, the protesters scared him away. Or rather, the coverage of the protests made them scurry away like cockroaches. And did you notice that Bush had a hard time keeping his paws off of our prime minister? Jesus, there's no accounting for some people's taste in men." Teresa, no, I haven't seen those pictures yet. I can't wait to see those. And then the Chinese thing, and I get emails from people occasionally. I got one tonight. I think I should ease up on the Chinese. No, hell no. I'm never going to ease up. Somebody said, well, you know, it's a fault of capitalism. That's why the Chinese are being such global pigs right now. Nah, I don't believe that either. I don't think there's any particular economic system that deliberately short circuits your ability to make a rational decision in the quiet confines of your little 45 person manufacturing plant where you sit there and go, should I put poison on these children's clothing or not? Let me see. Gosh, this is a tough one. Okay, what do I do? All right, we're trying to build capitalism here in China, so I'll go ahead and put poison on it. No, I'm sorry, I don't buy it. But anyway, this is the latest health risk from China. Scientists found formaldehyde in woolen and cotton clothes at levels from 500 to 18,000 times higher than is safe. Now, the weird thing is, this is in New Zealand. In New Zealand, there are no safety standards for clothes. They don't have this, apparently. I'll bet they will now. In that country, the National Poison Center spokesman told the Sunday Star Times of that country that testing had highlighted an area where little was known in New Zealand about the effects tainted clothing would have on people. But the clothes are coming from China, and not just clothing, but textiles that will be made into clothing in New Zealand. So it's not just the clothing. Formaldehyde in concentrations of 20 parts per million at that level can cause eye, skin, nasal irritations, respiratory problems, asthma, and cancer. 20 parts per million. And they're getting clothing registering 18,000 parts per million. Oh, my God. Well, I would imagine that the government of New Zealand is going to pass some quick legislation to stop this. But the Chinese, nah, to hell with the Chinese, the ones in China, to hell with them. They're trying to poison and destroy the world, much like George Bush, only they're doing it more subtly and they're trying to make money. So to hell with all of them. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. This event that's occurring, the Three Amigos Summit in Quebec, is the SPP, the Security and Prosperity Partnership. And one of the emails I got here said it's being implemented without any public or parliamentary scrutiny in that country. It's about eliminating Canada's ability to set its own independent regulatory standards, environmental protection measures, energy security, foreign, military, and immigration policies, and a wide range of other policies. And Francis in Montreal, Quebec writes, Mike, the summit is in Montebello at an old chateau. The supposed purpose of the summit is to discuss border security issues and, I hope you're sitting down, Arctic sovereignty. The story making news here is that supposedly a Russian submarine expedition in the Arctic land north of Canada has planted a flag on the floor of the Arctic Sea. Hence, the Arctic lands and sea belongs to Russia. Can things get more ridiculous than this? Personally, I think Chuckle Nuts needed a few new poker buddies, and asked Neumeyer to join him. We have a Bush wannabe as Prime Minister in Canada, a Bible thumper no less, with a minority government behind him, and he's still in power. We're lucky in Canada in that someone we don't like can be kicked out immediately. Yet we're stuck in Afghanistan until 2009 in a war in which no one knows what the conditions for victory are. The only sanity Canada has shown lately is that we have wisely avoided Iraq. And that's thanks to our former Prime Minister, Jean Chrétien, giving Chucklenuts the finger and telling him to go blank himself. Americans, don't bother coming here. It's slowly getting as bad as Jesus Land, also known as the USA. Francis in Montreal. We do know about that story, Francis. It was kind of a joke until we realized this is Putin, Bush's soul brother, who ordered the expedition because of the vast... You see, the Arctic ice is melting. And rather than seeing that as a global tragedy, there are, quote, world leaders, end quote, who see it as a wonderful opportunity to get at all the oil that's up there. So the Russians came up with this idea and said, well, there is a shelf, a land shelf that extends under the sea from the coast of Russia all the way yada, 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 you know, the North Pole, whatever. So that's what the expedition was about. And they actually sent a submarine down. How far? What was it? A couple of miles into the frigid Arctic Ocean to plant a metallic or a titanium or whatever the hell it is, Russian flag. I mean, this is insanity. It's crazy. There are a few of us old enough to remember the geophysical year of 1956, 57, when six or seven nations got together about Antarctica, realizing that there had to be treaties to kind of prevent it from being militarized. We were at the height of the Cold War then. To prevent it, whatever natural resources it had, from being exploited by any one country or any country. And I remember talking about that in social studies class. But that was 1,000 years ago. Malachi in Saskatoon writes and says, you can find all you want to know about the SPP just by go to Canadians.org. Canadians.org, and during the break, I checked it out. I would not presume to advise our brothers and sisters north of the border to cover your asses, but after reading some of the stuff at that website, woo, you better cover your asses. Security and Prosperity Partnership, yeah, okay. It has a nice ring to it, like NAFTA. Security and Prosperity Partnership. Oh, yeah, you Canadians really want to do that with the citizens of the U.S. and the Mexicans. yeah, we'll help you out. Eh? Oh, God. In the New York Times, was it Sunday? Article up there about the new surveillance powers approved by the Democrats in Congress this month, which apparently is going to allow the Bush administration to conduct spy operations that go way beyond wiretapping. Now, of course, you knew this. I knew this. I think Randy Rhodes knew it. I'm sure Stephanie Miller knew it. I'm sure Tom Hartman knew it. Who else knew it? I'm sure Peter Werbe knew it. I'm sure, you know, that handful of liberal talk show. I'm sure the talk show hosts out on the West Coast, Ray Taliaferro and guys like that, I'm sure they knew it. And I know you knew it. But for some reason, mainstream media and the Democrats apparently didn't know it. That what the Democrats in Congress have done has handed this proto-fascist Bush crime family legal permission to conduct spy operations without court approval. That include, are you sitting down? This is in the first paragraph in the New York Times. Certain types of physical searches on American soil and the collection of Americans' business records. Huh? And you know who's in charge of this, of course, right? You know who makes the decisions about who's going to be checked into. Right, you're right. What's his name? Gonzalez, the criminal attorney general of this sad country, and Mike McConnell, the clown who's the director of national intelligence. Those are the two who will decide. And I wonder if one says yes and one says no, whose opinion do you think will carry the more weight? Huh? Now, administration officials, Bush crime family thugs, said the Democrats are simply raising theoretical questions based on a harsh interpretation of the legislation. Harsh interpretation? What the hell does that mean? Was somebody, a lot of lawyers listen to this program, will you all give me a legal definition of the term harsh interpretation? Does such a thing exist? There is a legal interpretation. If the courts in this country were still functioning, there could be a constitutional interpretation, but a harsh interpretation? What the hell does that mean? Somebody want to send me an email? Come on. Come on, lawyers. What does a harsh, and I love lawyers, don't get me wrong, I love lawyers, a harsh interpretation of the legislation? the Democrats also emphasized, I'm sorry, not the Democrats, but the Bush thugs, said, there will be strict rules in place to minimize the extent to which U.S. citizens would be caught up in the surveillance. Did you get that, huh? Strict rules in place, I guess written by Torture Boy, to minimize the extent to which we citizens of the U.S. will be caught up in the surveillance that is now legal. Now, why did this happen? Well, it happened because, first of all, it happened because Republicans couldn't care less. They are subhuman. But the Democrats in Congress passed, again, passed legislation that they probably didn't completely understand. And the end result, I shouldn't say probably, why qualify it? That they obviously, unless, you don't suppose there's a conspiracy here, do you, between Democrats and Republicans? Let's assume they didn't fully understand it, and as a result, they've given this proto-fascist Bush crime family way more surveillance powers than it ever asked for. Now, we talked about this weeks ago, remember? We talked about it. Several legal experts, according to Times, said that by redefining the meaning of electronic surveillance, you know, newspeak, double unplus good, by redefining language, the new power that the Bush crime family now has to use intelligence collection methods extend far beyond wiretapping and are methods that previously required absolute, not FISA court order, but a legitimate court order, court approval if conducted inside the United States. The new powers include the collection of business records, physical searches. Do you understand? Do you understand what this means? This negates the Magna Carta. A physical search of you, your house, your person, your private property. The Fourth Amendment is now dead. Physical searches and so-called trap and trace operations, which analyzes your calling patterns. Your calling patterns. Not who you called, but the patterns of your calling. We'll be right back.
Union lords have knocked the fight out of a working man. And which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
Until attitudes change about freedom in America, we've got to protect our homeland in a new way.
Past the hour. Okay, so the legislation that Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid allowed to become law.
Well, it's only for 6 months, Mike. Damn, you know, then it's up for review.
The legislation, now, you all know the Fourth Amendment. It's very simple. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. Shall not be violated. And no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly, describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized, particularly describing. Oh, well, Mike, they didn't mean that. And now it's gone. It is gone. It is simply gone. The legislation will allow the Bush crime family to demand the business records, for example, of an American in Chicago, without a warrant, if the Bush crime family, Alberto Gonzalez, claims that the search concerns its surveillance of a person who is in Paris. Now, you get the key word. You get the key word, asserts. Not offers proof, not shows up with a warrant, not with a legal claim, but just asserts. Just says it. Some civil rights advocates, according to the Times, said they suspected that the Bush crime family made the language of the bill intentionally vague to allow it even broader discretion over these decisions. Whether intentional or not, the end result, according to top Democratic aides and other experts on national security law, is that the legislation may grant the government the right to collect a range of information on American citizens inside the U.S. without warrants as long as the administration asserts that the spying concerns the monitoring of a person believed to be overseas. Do you see that? Asserts, believed to be. As long as Gonzalez, torture boy, says, well, we want every bit of your personal records, Mike Malloy, because we're spying on someone that we think might be overseas, and maybe you wrote to her. Give us everything. Where's your warrant, Mr. Gonzalez? Warrant? Where's my Fourth Amendment protection? Shut up. Vinnie Vines, a spokeswoman for the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, that would be Mike McConnell, said the concerns raised by congressional Democrats about the wide scope of the new legislation were speculative. But she declined to discuss specific aspects of how this legislation will be enacted. No, we're not going to talk about it. The legislation gives Mike McConnell and Gonzalez broad discretion in enacting the new procedures and improving the way surveillance is conducted. While you and I are gaggly crapping around on this radio program tonight, McConnell and Gonzalez are writing the rules. Do you understand that? Now, there was a meeting. The Justice Department, some officials in the Justice Department got together with concerned Democrats. I don't know who that would be. And Bruce Fein, the Justice Department lawyer in the Reagan administration, along with other critics of this legislation. And they had a meeting. They were arguing with the Justice Department officials repeatedly for an assurance that the administration, the Bush crime family, considered itself bound by the restrictions imposed by Congress. Forget the Constitution, just by Congress. And guess what? The Justice Department, led by Ken Weinstein, the Assistant Attorney General for National Security, refused to do so, according to three participants in the meeting. That stance angered Mr. Fein and others. It sent the message, Mr. Fein said in an interview, that the new legislation, though it is already broadly worded, is just advisory, that Bush can still do whatever he wants to do. Mark Rotenberg, executive director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center, who also attended this meeting, said to the Justice Department, you've just turned the courts into a spectator. Well, Mr. Jefferson's lighthearted banter about fertilizing with specific manure, the Tree of Liberty, just seems more relative every night that I sit down behind this microphone. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
There's a camera across the street. Supposed to be protecting me. Storing every little file. Make a promise and take a while. Hooked up to a satellite. Make sure the world's behaving right. I don't mean to bust your groove. Think it's time we made a move. Freedom isn't free tonight. Freedom isn't free tonight.
I don't email, however. And there's a reason. I don't want you reading my personal stuff.
Oh, really?
Oh, okay, George. I don't want you reading my personal stuff.
Jesse over at TVNewsLies.org writes a blog. And, all right, in fairness, because I really have been busting up on the Chinese about the poisonous crap that they're dumping onto the global market and the American market, well, any market, Jesse writes the following. As America continues its relentless mission to push the limits of hypocrisy in every area from human rights to personal or national security, the recent spate of attacks on Chinese-made products by the American glass house-living, stone-throwing establishment media serves as yet another example of how American hypocrisy seems to have no limits. Let us for a moment forget about the healthy and safe contributions to our air, water, and DNA-altered food supply our American corporations have made. Forget for a moment about the mercury in your child's American-made vaccine, or the hormones, antibiotics, or rocket fuel in your American cow-produced milk. And forget about the poisons pouring into our rivers from our American manufacturing plants. Forget for a moment about the new laws pushed through by the Bush administration, reversing the efforts to reduce the amount of mercury and other poisons being pumped into your air by coal-burning power plants. Let's just think about one product made predominantly by American companies and sold around the world by American companies. That one product, cigarettes. Think about this. Cigarettes are the only product ever permitted to be produced and sold virtually unregulated that, when used as directed, will kill you. It is the only legal product that will, with every use, not only cause harm to the user, but will cause harm to people within air traveling distance from the user. I have seen American people yell and scream and throw tantrums when any discussion about the right to smoke are even discussed. I, as an asthma sufferer, have had to tiptoe around the oversensitivities of people who care nothing about the harm they do to those around us while they exercise their right to make use of the deadly, harmful product known as the cigarette. These same people are now bashing the Chinese because they produced cheap toys and cheap food that may not be as safe as they should be. Oh, is there even a word to describe the magnitude of American hypocrisy? If Americans want to address the problems posed by dangerous products, they may want to start with American products. Americans don't even want to keep their own kids safe from cigarettes. What makes them want to protect them from toys? Think about it. Yeah. Well, that's a good point, Jesse. That's a good point. What I read the other day that within I don't know what within 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, whatever it is, there will be 50 million deaths per year from cigarette-induced diseases. I don't talk about it too much because there's nothing more irritating than a reformed smoker. And that's certainly me. I mean, I smoked cigarettes like a chimney. Well, not like a chimney, but enough to cause all sorts of hideous diseases, and stopped about 6 years ago. And I just don't, you know, I don't even get into it except when I get these severe bronchial attacks. And I think, Jesus, God, see? See? I have an Uncle Mike story corner here, but it is, I don't know if we can squeeze it in tonight. I'm going to try. But I'll tell you what, do we have folks? We do have folks who have been very patiently waiting. So let's do some phone calls here for a while. All right? You want to do that? The number is 800-989-1480. So let's start with A.J. the Music Factory, who is calling from Catskills, New York. Hey, A.J., thanks for your patience.
Hey, handsome. How are you tonight?
I'm okay.
Yeah, don't answer. I can hear.
Right, I'm okay.
Hey, listen, tell us a story, Uncle Mike. You can't leave that out.
It's a good one.
All right, well, we want to hear it.
All right.
First of all, good evening to the whole Malloy family. When Stupid says homeland, he means fatherland. You know that, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
So,
same way the Soviets said motherland.
Yeah, it's exactly the same thing.
Right.
What I'd like to talk about quickly is this question that Stephanopoulos accepted and asked at Sunday's debate. about, do you believe the power of prayer can alter events? I have no goddamned idea why that was addressed at a presidential debate. I have no goddamned idea why.
Right, now, wait, just AJ, just one per phone call. One GD.
Really, Mike? Have we got down to one?
Yeah, please.
Oh, Mike.
All right. You have no reason. Say it again.
I have no idea. I have no idea why the presidential candidates continue to pander.
Yeah.
With this question, why they didn't just sweep it off the table is beyond me. And I was listening to some shows, some talk shows today, and various people called in with various opinions, and a woman called in and said, "Well, you know, I'm a believer. In other words, she's a Christian."
Yeah.
And to me, this issue is tied in with this idea that there are believers and there are non-believers in this country, and
right.
I have had it. And it's not that I'm anti-Christian or anti-anybody, but it's time for Christians. I really don't want to hear anymore, oh, there are good Christians. It's time for Christians to stand up and be counted and tell those who are abusing their religion and abusing their beliefs to sit down and shut up. This country is a buffet. And everybody gets one place at that table, an equal place. And everybody brings one dish. And I have had it with these Christians who present themselves as exclusive to the truth and exclusive to being favored in this country and the electoral process.
Well,
and I personally am not an atheist. Let me finish my.
Right.
I personally am not an atheist, but I can't believe, I can't conceive of what it's like every day to be an atheist and get up and know that in the eyes of many in this country, I am a second-class citizen, that I just don't quite measure up.
You know how you deal with that? At least the way I deal with that, I frankly don't care. But in regards to what you've just said, this is weird, because Gordon, one of our listeners in Oklahoma City, had just sent this to me right before you called. Get this. This is from the newspaper in Columbus, Ohio, the Columbus Dispatch.
Mm-hmm.
Church services in Ohio at so-called liberal churches are being disrupted by an invasion of fundamentalists, the Dominionists, on a mission to rebuke the liberal churches for the acceptance and toleration of those who happen to be lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgendered. And the article here is at the Columbus Dispatch. It's a long, it's from August the 17th. It's a long article. It's a long URL, so I don't want to give over the air. But apparently, according to the Columbus Dispatch, these left-behind freaks are actually invading, disrupting church, Christian church services to protest their support of homosexuality. And here, this is what the Columbus Dispatch says. Minutemen United vowed to attend these services, disrupt them every Sunday. The group started its crusade when First Baptist Church in Granville, Ohio, hosted Love Makes a Family, a traveling exhibit by the Family Diversity Project, showing photos of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered families. The night the exhibit opened in July, members of Minutemen United stood outside and protested the exhibit and the church's open attitude toward homosexuality, and then invaded. Oh, gee. So, it,
well,
it's,
and
AJ, it's happening. Only just reverse of what you. What I don't think liberal Christians have the backbone to stand up to these neo-Nazi Christ murderers and Jew haters and Muslim killers and say to them, go to hell. I don't think liberal Christians have the courage to do it.
Well, and they're invading the government. I mean, you caught that video on the web where that Hindu cleric wanted to open up prayer, you know, and he was shouted down. What on earth is going on here? So I am sick to death
of this takeover by Christian fascists in this country, and it just made me blow sky high when I heard Stephanopoulos validate that. Why he didn't get this question in his hand and say, "Well, this is nonsense. I'm not going to ask this.
He actually asked these was it Democrats or Republicans?
Democrats. It was Democrats this Sunday.
And the question was, do you believe that prayer can alter events?
Do you believe that the power of prayer can alter events? And John Edwards was the only one who came close to treating the question correctly. And the rest of them, you know, pandered and danced around, and it was... it just makes me vomit. I can't stand it anymore.
I know. I hear you, AJ. I was going to say I believe in the power of a billion butterfly sneezes, but that's a whole different issue. All right, listen, man, got to go. Thank you,
Mike. Thanks for your good work.
All right, take care. Take care. Hope everything's good in the Catskills. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
America occurs when people walk up and say, "Mr. President, I'm praying for you."
It's about 10 before the hour. Too much stuff here. Too much stuff here. Let's go back to phone calls as promised. Len is calling from New York City, listening via the internet. Len, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. Hey. Nice to speak with you.
My pleasure.
You know, I was agreeing with you 100%. I didn't get a chance to tell the... person who answered the phone the rest of what I wanted to say. You know, I'm an Orthodox guy who goes to synagogue at least once a week, and I try to beat into the heads of the idiots there the realization that if Bush and all of his friends had the chance, you know, to make more money and, you know, kiss off Israel in the process, they would.
Mm-hmm. I don't understand why... certain people in, and I may be missing something completely, but why certain people in various Israeli governments over the past 30 years don't understand that evangelical Christians will put them all to the sword, given the chance.
Well, you know, they do. At the same time, they figure, like other political calculations, that they're going to give it a short-term pact. You know, not worrying about losing the upper hand in the bargain.
Yeah, but that reminds me of something. What was the title? Mephistopheles, I think.
I don't know. I'm not that good. But there was another point.
You know, making deals with the devil.
Right, of course. There's another point I wanted to make sure that you could at least distinguish to other people, because you'll get callers, you know, tying in the neocons like Crystal and Pearl. You know, the PNAC lunatics, and because they're Jewish, they tie it all in, you know, as though they're connecting dots. But many of people don't realize that just because they're Jewish, they don't give a hoot that it's Israel because it's Israel, you know, and they're Jewish. To them, it could be Uganda. As long as it's a U.S. military outpost there in their mind, you know, that's what's important. It's the U.S. power. It has nothing to do with Israel being Israel for Jews. And most people don't get that. It's like, you know, it's a dot. They think they're connecting dots, just like when George Bush goes, you know, well, we're fighting in Iraq because that's where Al-Qaeda is.
Mm-hmm.
So
the American Jews who back...
well, it's the PNAC.
The PNAC group who back the invasions, of, you know, the several invasions, ones already have occurred and ones that they hope will occur. These are not people who have the interest of Israel at heart, is what you're saying?
Well, they have the interest of Israel at heart in that it's a democracy and they consider it an important outpost, but not by virtue of them being Jewish and Israel being a Jewish homeland. It's, you know, as opposed to, you know, the AIPAC people, mm-hmm. you know, who are very rabid, you know, defenders that, you know, have it all about being Israel being the homeland and nothing about the benefits of America having, you know, a base, you know,
right.
to launch more
right,
military.
Right.
So it's a lot of different dots that, you know, people think they're connecting, but they're really different points on a map.
Well, I have to admit, I've had to remind myself over and over and over again of exactly the point that you're making, and sometimes it is it's much easier to be intellectually lazy and just kind of slide back into the belief that people like Pearl and people like Wolfowitz really put the interests of Israel way beyond the interests of the United States, and in that respect. Are committing political acts of treason in the advocacy that they have for U.S. foreign policy, that they put this country at risk over and over and over again. Now, that might be an effect of the pushing of their policies, but I think...
Well, it's all towards the purpose of, you know, the same thing as, you know, I mean, you call up Sean Hannity if you would try to have a conversation with him and get him to agree that WABC and he support gay rights because, I mean, he's working for a subsidiary of Disney there, and Disney mm-hmm. has, you know, openly gay weddings under their, you know, at the Disney World all the
mm-hmm.
time. You know, it's $8,000 will get you a Disneyland gay wedding. They don't care if you're gay or straight. They'll take your money.
That's, I get your point. I get your point, Lynn. How often do you listen?
As often as I can. You know, it's 9 o'clock here. I click on the Internet while I'm sitting here reading and doing a little work a lot of times.
Oh, you mean it's 9 o'clock when the program starts?
I don't always get to start when, you know, but,
yeah.
You know, like... I miss you not having you in New York. You know, I miss Sam Cedar. You know, Lionel likes to hear himself talk. He's got a great vocabulary, but he doesn't really seem to be on message.
No, he's kind of a goof. You know, Sam is still on Sunday nights.
I know, and I've been emailing Mark Green. You know, bitching.
Forget about
him,
it. Forget about
if
it.
If you want to win the 2008 election here, you know, you've got to come to a gunfight with guns, not knives.
No, there's certain people that will never work again on a regular basis at Air America. Sam happens to be one of them because, to use the term I hate, but to use it anyway, he's off the reservation. He does not. He will not. And there's a couple more there who are superstars on that network who are also getting very close to the edge because they refuse to adopt the policies that are coming down from the top. And those policies are not liberal, I'm telling you. Len, it's good to hear from you. Thanks for checking in. Call again, all right?
Sure thing.
Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio, not Air America.
a drunk in a midnight choir. I have tried in my way to be free. Like a fish on a hook, like a knife from an old-fashioned book. I have saved all my ribbons for thee.
It's about 7 past the hour. I think we ought to use that one, Kathy. We've been trying third-hour theme songs. And Leonard Cohen via Jennifer Warnes is a pretty good combination. I like that, yeah. I want to do Uncle Mike's Story Corner here, but we have a couple of people that have been holding on for a couple of hours, so for an hour. So let's do these phone calls, and then...
I was just going to say, before we choose a new third-hour theme, we probably should pray on it. see if any changes happen.
Yeah.
I believe in the power of prayer.
You do?
I mean, you know, levitate the Pentagon, you know, whatever, man.
Man? Have you been reading my old hippie novels? Did you get into my copy of On the Road Again?
You know, if prayer worked, Bush wouldn't be president.
That's very true. Phone calls here. Matthew, listening on the internet, is calling from Bedford, Texas. Hey, Matthew.
Hey, Mike. Word to the wise, don't eat Chinese food anytime soon.
Yeah, why not, Matthew?
About 4 days ago, I ate at a local buffet. The next day, I was battling a 104-degree temperature.
Yeah?
Yeah. But, you know, and I'm still getting it, so.
Are you sure it was are you sure it was the food?
Well, if it wasn't, then it's a pretty painful coincidence.
Well, but now, did you do that in China or in the United States?
In the United States, but I got pretty badly sick. Stomach, diarrhea, all that stuff.
Yeah, but, don't give us more information than we need, yeah, Matthew.
But I did want to, I got two things. First of all, in terms of the religion discussion,
yeah.
The thing that I really, first of all, I say, I kind of believe in the power of prayer, and that the power that when people are praying, they're not doing anything. You know, it's like they just get on their knees and they're just sitting there, and it's like, oh, okay, that's productive.
Well, it's supposed to be something other than that. I don't know if you read, Matthew, about the experiments using prayer as healing. This is a very involved study that was conducted, I want to say, Mayo Clinic or Johns Hopkins or one of the leading institutions in this country. And they had three groups. They had people who were ill, who knew that people were praying for them.
Yeah, I heard this, about this in the God.
Right. People who were ill who knew people weren't praying for them, and people who were ill who didn't know one way or the other. And as it turned out, the group that suffered the most adverse
of prayed for.
Yeah, the people who knew they were being prayed for stayed sick and got sicker, and a lot of them died. Now, I don't know what that proves. It probably doesn't prove anything. But as far as the power of prayer is concerned, if someone wants to connect with their super ego or whatever and sit there and chat with oneself, I don't see anything wrong with that. The problem I see, though, is when they start getting answers. Remember, when you talk to God, you're being prayerful. When God talks to you, you're schizophrenic.
Well, I mean, in my experience, when I want something to happen, I usually go off and do it myself. It's not, I don't get on my knees and say, do this for me, or I need this to happen for me. Really, it's just, okay, I want money, so I'll get a job. Or, you know, I want to have a nice day, so I'll go out and have a nice day.
Yeah, you know? that makes sense to me, Matthew.
But anyway, the last thing I wanted to say is, you know, a couple of shows, you know, even this show, you know, I hear you and then Kathy Bates chirping. I kind of wish you could have like a little mini segment, you know, fun with Mike and Kathy or something, where you get a little topic and just you two talk about it, you know?
Uh-huh.
Kind of like Uncle Mike's Story Corner, but it's fun with Mike and Kathy or something.
We'll put that into the hopper.
All right. But I want to hear Uncle Mike's Story Corner, so.
All right, Matthew.
Sorry to keep you up.
All right. No, that's all right. Just kick back and relax and take some more Keopectate, okay?
Ibuprofen for me.
Ibuprofen. Okay. All right, Matthew. Yeah. Thanks. Appreciate it. Take care.
As for the Mike and Kathy idea, I think we should pray on it. Wasn't there a bunch of books about that?
Regarding the question, Reg writes, Mike, the question to the Democratic candidate specifically asks whether they believe that the power of prayer could prevent disasters, such as Katrina.
Or Bush.
Dang, does that mean these pious people refused to pray for the levees to remain intact? Did they refuse to use their great power of prayer to prevent all the earthquakes and tsunamis and diseases and airplane crashes that take place with such regularity? Why the hell are we spending billions on homeland security when all we have to do is join in collective prayer and all will be well? And the terrorists will go poof in the night. It seems that those who believe in the power of prayer are simply evil folk who will not pray for the end to tragedy on this earth. It's beyond insane, Mike. If any of the Democrats on the platform were to deny the power of prayer, he or she would automatically be labeled as unfit to lead the nation. Yeah, isn't it kind of weird? Now, I know I'm pissing off believers tonight, and I'm sorry, but that's what you get when you come to this program. I'm sorry. It's just part of the price of admission. But someone who will say, yes, I believe that there are powerful beings who live up in the clouds, and there's one all-powerful being, and he is a he. He controls anything he wants to control, and our lives are not our own. And if you make nice with this cloud being, he may or may not grant you your wish. What you have to do is wish real hard and click your heels together three times, and if that doesn't work, just do it again and again and again. If you know, and the same person, the same political candidate would say, and yes, I also believe in the biblical story of creation, the Western Christian Jewish biblical Muslim story of creation, that a talking snake slithered around a naked woman in the Garden of Eden, and as a result, this talking snake brought all sorts of catastrophes and disasters because the talking snake convinced the naked woman that if she ate of the forbidden fruit, she would gain knowledge. And we all know that women are supposed to be stupid, ignorant, and preferably naked. And by the way, I also believe that some freak named Noah built a boat. And it was 40 cubits by 30 cubits by 100 cubits by whatever the hell it was. But somehow he managed to get two of everything all the way down to polio viruses. Well, I guess you don't need two of those. But he managed to get two of everything. Everything. Two from sea slugs that only lived off the coast of the Philippines. And, of course, back then, who knew where the Philippines were? But he got it all together and got it all on this boat. And I can go on and on and on. Now, the person, the candidate who stands on the stage and declares all this may cause the listeners to switch back over to the Paris Hilton channel, but that candidate will not be laughed off the stage. But a candidate who says, power of prayer, are you out of your freaking mind? Will be. Or worse. Now, let's go kill some Muslims for Christ. Or is it Jews? I don't know. We gotta kill somebody. I am somebody. I'm a killer for Jesus. And these liberal Christians, we're gonna get them too. And the queers. And the feminists. And the liberals. Take your religion and stuff it in your ear. Can't stand it. Yeah, and for Stephanopoulos, what is he? Greek Orthodox? That's Christian.
You think the power of prayer can stop a hurricane?
What's his name, dude? Pat Robertson, he said he prayed hurricanes away from Virginia Beach all the time until one hit. I don't know. Sorry, folks, I am not into it. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
On the right side of the Lord, and when you die, your conscience, it is clear. you'd best hope your atom bombs are better than the sword at the time when your reckoning is here. 'Cause I don't think Jesus would send gunships into Bethlehem or jets to race the towns of Timorese. I don't think Jesus would lend money to dictators or drive those SUVs. And I don't think Jesus would ever have dropped a single ounce of...
This is good versus evil. These are evildoers. They have no justification.
Time once again for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Everybody all cozy? Your jammies, huh? Got your hot chocolate? Popcorn? Drugs? Whatever you do, Tonight's Uncle Mike's Story Corner is authored by Boudica Jayamaha, Wesley Smith, Jeremy Roebuck, Omar Mora, Edward Sandemeyer, Yance Gray, and Jeremy Murphy. It is titled The War as We Saw It. Baghdad. Viewed from Iraq at the tail end of a 15-month deployment, the political debate in Washington is indeed surreal. Counterinsurgency is, by definition, a competition between insurgents and counterinsurgents for the control and support of a population. To believe that Americans, with an occupying force that long ago outlived its reluctant welcome, can win over a recalcitrant local population and win this counterinsurgency is far-fetched. As responsible infantrymen and non-commissioned officers with the 82nd Airborne Division soon heading back home, we are skeptical of recent press coverage portraying the conflict as increasingly manageable and feel it has neglected the mounting civil, political, and social unrest we see every day. Obviously, these are our personal views and should not be seen as official within our chain of command. The claim that we are increasingly in control of the battlefields in Iraq is an assessment arrived at through a flawed, American-centered framework. Yes, we are militarily superior, but our successes are offset by failures elsewhere. What soldiers call the battle space remains the same, with changes only at the margins. It is crowded with actors who do not fit neatly into boxes. Sunni extremists, Al-Qaeda terrorists, Shiite militiamen, criminals, armed tribes. This situation is made more complex by the questionable loyalties and Janus-faced role of the Iraqi police and Iraqi army, which have been trained and armed at the United States taxpayers' expense. A few nights ago, for example, we witnessed the death of one American soldier and the critical wounding of two others when a lethal armor-piercing explosive was detonated between an Iraqi army checkpoint and a police one. Local Iraqis readily testified to American investigators that Iraqi police and army officers escorted the triggermen and helped plant the bomb. These civilians highlighted their own predicament. Had they informed the Americans of the bomb before the incident, the Iraqi army, the police, or the local Shiite militia would have killed their families. As many grunts will tell you, this is a near routine event. Reports that a majority of Iraqi army commanders are now reliable partners can be considered only misleading rhetoric. The truth is, the battalion commanders, even if well-meaning, have little or no influence over the thousands of obstinate men under them in an incoherent chain of command who are really loyal only to their militias. Similarly, Sunnis who have been underrepresented in the new Iraqi armed forces now find themselves forming militias, sometimes with our tacit support. Sunnis recognize that the best guarantee they may have against Shiite militias and the Shiite-dominated government is to form their own armed bands. We arm them to aid in our fight against al-Qaeda. However, while creating proxies is essential in winning a counterinsurgency, it requires that the proxies are loyal to the center that we claim to support. Armed Sunni tribes have indeed become effective surrogates, but the enduring question is where their loyalties will lie in our absence. The Iraqi government finds itself working at cross purposes with us on this issue because it is justifiably fearful that Sunni militias will turn on it should the Americans leave. In short, we operate in a bewildering context of determined enemies and questionable allies, one where the balance of forces on the ground remains entirely unclear. In the course of writing this article, this fact became all too clear. One of us, Staff Sergeant Murphy, an Army Ranger and reconnaissance team leader, was shot in the head during a time-sensitive target acquisition mission on August 12th. He is expected to survive and is being flown to a military hospital in the United States. While we have the will and the resources to fight in this context, we are effectively hamstrung because realities on the ground require measures we will always refuse, namely, the widespread use of lethal and brutal force. Given the situation, it is important not to assess security from an American-centered perspective. The ability of, say, American observers to safely walk down the streets of formerly violent towns is not a resounding indicator of security. What matters is the experience of the local citizenry and the future of the counterinsurgency. When we take this view, we see that a vast majority of Iraqis feel increasingly insecure and view us as an occupation force that has failed to produce normalcy after 4 years and is increasingly unlikely to do so as we continue to arm each warring side. More of this when we come back after the break. This is the report that General Davis Petraeus should be issuing.
I woke up today, I was crying, lost in a lost world. So many people.
Back to Uncle Mike's Story Corner, The War as We Saw It, written by 7 returning members of the 82nd Airborne. They continue, coupling our military strategy to an insistence that the Iraqis meet political benchmarks for reconciliation is also unhelpful. The morass in the government has fueled impatience and confusion while providing no semblance of security to average Iraqis. Leaders are far from arriving at a lasting political settlement. This should not be surprising, since a lasting political solution will not be possible while the military situation remains in constant flux. The Iraqi government is run by the main coalition partners of the Shiite-dominated United Iraqi Alliance, with Kurds as minority members. The Shiite clerical establishment formed the alliance to make sure its people did not succumb to the same mistake as in 1920, rebelling against the Western occupying force and the British, and losing what they believed was their inherent right to rule Iraq as the majority. The qualified and reluctant welcome we received from the Shiites since the invasion has to be seen in that historical context. They saw in us something useful for the moment. Now that moment is passing, as the Shiites have achieved what they believe is rightfully theirs. Their next task is to figure out how best to consolidate the gains, because reconciliation without consolidation risks losing it all. Washington's insistence that the Iraqis correct the 3 gravest mistakes we made, de-Ba'athification, the dismantling of the Iraqi army, and the creation of a loose federalist system of government, Washington's insistence on this places us at cross purposes with the government we have committed to support. Political reconciliation in Iraq will occur, but not at our insistence or in ways that meet our benchmarks. It will happen on Iraqi terms when the reality on the battlefield is congruent with that in the political sphere. There will be no magnanimous solutions that please every party the way we expect, and there will be winners and losers. The choice we have left is to decide which side we will take. Trying to please every party in the conflict, as we do now, will only ensure we are hated by all in the long run. At the same time, the most important front in the counterinsurgency, improving basic social and economic conditions, is the one on which we have failed most miserably. 2 million Iraqis are in refugee camps in bordering countries. Close to 2 million more are internally displaced and now fill many urban slums. Cities lack electricity, telephone services, and sanitation. So-called lucky Iraqis live in gated communities barricaded with concrete blast walls that provide them with a sense of communal claustrophobia rather than any sense of security we would consider normal. In a lawless environment where men with guns rule the streets, engaging in the banalities of life has become a death-defying act. 4 years into our occupation, we have failed on every promise. While we have substituted Ba'ath Party tyranny with a tyranny of Islamist militia and criminal violence. When the primary preoccupation of average Iraqis is when and how they are likely to be killed, we can hardly feel smug as we hand out care packages. As an Iraqi man told us a few days ago with deep resignation, we need security, not free food. In the end, we need to recognize that our presence may have released Iraqis from the grip of a tyrant, but that it has also robbed them of their self-respect. They will soon realize that the best way to regain dignity is to call us what we are, an army of occupation, and force our withdrawal. Until that happens, it would be prudent for us to increasingly let Iraqis take center stage in all matters, to come up with a nuanced policy in which we assist them from the margins, but let them resolve their differences as they see fit. This suggestion is not meant to be defeatist, but rather to highlight our pursuit of incompatible policies to absurd ends without recognizing the incongruities. We need not talk about our morale. As committed soldiers, we will see this mission through. Uncle Mike's Story Corner for tonight, brought to you by Boudica Jayama, Wesley Smith, Jeremy Roebuck, Omar Mora, Edward Sandmeyer, Yance T. Gray, and Jeremy Murphy. And if you'd like to read it again, go to Sunday's New York Times, The War as We Saw It. Now, wouldn't it be amazing? Wouldn't it be amazing, otherworldly, supernatural, surreal, off, just out of consideration, obviously, for a report from General David Petraeus, which will be written by some thug like, Gonzalez, Mike McConnell, and Cheney, but a report, an honest, straightforward, from the battlefield report that would say exactly what these soldiers and non-commissioned officers who have been there for 15 months, who have been in combat, who have seen it all, have said, have written, have gone on the record. These are active duty people. These are people who have weapons whose barrels of their rifles are still hot from being fired. And who's listening? How long will it take? How long will it take for some son of a bitch in right-wing media to go after these guys now? Huh? How long will it take? Did Limbaugh, did that filthy pig start today? Did Hannity? Yeah, they will see the mission through, as they say. Because regardless of the lowering of standards by the Pentagon, regardless of the corrupt leadership, regardless of the jerk, the jerks who are now in positions of command and control all the way to the top, the military attitude is still alive. The military ethic is still out there. Don't send me to go kill people and blow things up. I'd rather stay home with my family. But if you do send me to kill people and blow things up, then for Christ's sake, stand behind me and give me a mission. But of course, we would prefer that you not send me to begin with. Bush and his pigs have almost destroyed the United States military. All branches of it except the Air Force. How have they done that? By their incompetence, by their lies, by their deceptions, by their waging wars of opportunity, for God's sake, by their forcing soldiers to redeploy 3 and 4 and 5 times to a combat zone, urban combat, where the enemy is no more identifiable than somebody going out to buy a loaf of bread. We have an inordinate number of severe injuries. We have PTSD to an extent that's going to haunt this society for the next quarter century, thanks to George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and these rat bastards who have done this, not just to our country, not just to the Iraqis, but also to the United States military. It's astonishing. So for the 7 or 8 soldiers who wrote that op-ed piece for the New York Times, I think America ought to, on some level, say thank you for finally allowing us to see the truth of George W. Bush's pretend little war that he gets to play with his lead soldiers. A salute and deep respect to these soldiers. Nothing but further contempt to this Bush crime family. God, they're horrifying. All right. Back to your phone calls. Mark is calling from San Diego, listening on KLSD. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mike.
Hey.
I've been listening to you for years, and I want to thank you for trusting me to get on the air I'm an East Toledo guy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm a little nervous, although I don't get nervous because I'm a performer. But, yeah, my dad was a steel worker. And, you know, when I look at China and its development, none of my mother and her friends were all widows in their late 40s because all the Hungarians worked at the steel mill.
Yeah.
Period. Interlake. Steel. It was
sure.
Interlake iron, then it became steel.
Right.
And, you know, the only woman, she was like a widow. She was 52 or 53. She won the Ohio lottery, mm-hmm. you know. But my mom was a widow in her late 30s. So China's going through this. And part of the reason why I called is you were talking earlier in the show about China. And I remember years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, hearing that there was no autism in China until, I don't know what the vaccine company was, but there are 2 million children with autism in China after an American company started selling their vaccine in China. Period. That's Robert Kennedy also wrote about that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, since I've been on hold, instead of giving money to the Nova M Radio Founders Club, I thought I'd pay for the cell phone call. But
I understand, Mark. I understand. Yeah.
So,
I have a 3-year-old, and I have children who are in their 40s. So I have watched the vaccination thing. When my older children were aged to be vaccinated, there might have been 4, in some cases 3. I think in when I was a kid, there were 2. And my daughter Molly, who seems to have gotten through it fine because of her age and long discussions with her pediatrician, Molly's probably had, 15 different vaccinations over the course of
We spent a lot of time praying about it first.
Oh, stop it. But as far as autism having a link through thimerosal and mercury, you know, I don't know. I hope it turns out that that's not the case, because there are going to be an awful lot of parents who are just going to be so... I don't know the word. I don't know what to say. Mark, I have to leave it there. I hope you call again. I'd love to talk again to somebody from East Toledo, okay?
You know what's frightening? I went on the internet, and I found out that now they're attributing autism to Chinese products.
Well, that's a little bizarre, too. Thanks, Mark. We'll talk again. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It's about 9 before the hour. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program in Phoenix at KPHX, our flagship station, also co-produced, answered your phone calls, went out and got us all coffee, and also took care of filling up the tank in our Hummer. Thanks, Ian. Billy Foster, who is our moderator in the NovaMradio.com chat room. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Mark Marshall and the moderators at MikeMalloy.com. Message board, and Catherine Baer, executive producer. I think we can do another call here. Robert is calling from Davis, California, listening on the Quake. Hey, Robert. Hey, Robert. Robert, let's put Robert on hold real quick, if you don't mind. And let's talk with CJ, who is calling from Phoenix, listening on KPHX. CJ, welcome to the program.
Well, Mike, I've been praying. You answered my call.
Well, see you.
You answered my prayer, Mike. Thank you.
You're more than welcome.
Hey, why would I not be surprised to see Pat Robertson and his freakish gang start coming on the airwaves and saying that their prayers, they prayed that the hurricane would not hit Texas. And instead it went to that horrible Mexico.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the power of prayer works, you know. It does. They'll do that. They're evil like that.
Oh, I know. I just wish that there wasn't this resurgence, and it's all over the planet. I've been reading a couple of articles about this resurgence in fundamentalist religion. It's driving me crazy. It scares the living hell out of me, so to speak. It's not just in this country. It's in Europe. It's in the Middle East. It's in South America. It's in Central America. It's in India. And eventually it'll probably come to China. But this resurgence of the more hysterical, really mentally deranged kind of religious belief and imagery and so on and so forth, it's don't know.
People around the world need to understand that faith is very important. Faith is key to a person's life. But evangelical, whatever religion you believe in, is so wrong. It's so wrong.
Well, if faith equals a belief in oneself and belief in one's ability and belief in one's friends, if it's reality based faith, sure. If it's faith in some sky spook who's going to swoop down and you know, save my child from cancer or stop me from smoking or give me a fat paycheck, which is what most of this sky spook or show me how to kill Christians or Jews or Muslims, you know, that kind of stuff to me is psychopathology on a level that is just staggering. It almost negates natural selection and evolution. It almost puts us right back into the slime pit.
Mike, we couldn't agree more. It's such a pleasure. And again, thank you for answering my prayer.
You bet, CJ. Take care. An email from somebody who earlier today said, I'm sorry, I don't have your name here. Please don't miss the op-ed in the New York Times by 7 soldiers from the 82nd Airborne, newly returned from Iraq. Rest assured, the neocons will be mercilessly swift-boating these guys come Monday morning. And also an email said, will the Sunday op-ed by the seven non-commissioned officers and soldiers deployed in Iraq get the kind of wall-to-wall coverage that the Michael O'Hanlon Ken Pollack piece in the New York Times did a week or so ago? That was the piece that these two liars said that they had been war critics and now had come to support the war. They'd never been Bush critics of his war. At the clear behest of the right wing, who were pimping them like hookers, O'Hanlon and Pollack, to any TV John who would have them, my feeling is that these soldiers will not get the coverage for a couple of reasons. The first is that the Democrats don't seem to have any kind of apparatus to, quote, catapult the propaganda, end quote, or seemingly any desire to have one. And the second reason is because I think the right will go into overdrive to present these guys as good and patriotic non-coms who aren't all that bright, if you know what I mean. Shh. Yeah. Well, I haven't heard anything about that op-ed piece, which was one of the reasons I was just damn determined to read it in its entirety this evening. And if you haven't, if you do want a copy of that, just go to nytimes.com, and it should be. I don't think you have to be a premium member to get that, but I think it should be required reading. This, as I said earlier, this is the kind of report that General David Petraeus and Odierno and the rest of these military suck-ups who are even having their control of their command taken away from them in the writing of this report in September, this is the kind of report that should be written. Straight ahead, straightforward, the truth. If you want us to continue here, fine, but we're not going to succeed because we won't do the one thing that it requires, and that's unleash the forces of hell against every single person in this country. If you want to do that, if you want to kill to an extent that would make most Americans retch and vomit, then we can win. If you don't want to do that, then why are we here? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.